News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid and conservative and just plain right. Thanks for holding on, folks. Listen, we've got a caller. I'll go back and I think we're going to step back into the last topic, but I'll do that real quick. Chuck from Gurley. Hey, Chuck, Phil Williams on Right Side. How you doing, man?
Doing good. Thought I'd let you know about this book that Glenn Beck just wrote, and it's he and a guy named Justin Haskins, who runs the anti-socialism portion of the Heartland Institute. And it's called Joe Biden in the 21st Century Fascism, The Great Reset. And it goes into all the stuff you're talking about and explains it thoroughly. And it's got about 40 pages of footnotes at the end of it. So it's a well-researched book, and it would be interesting for people to read this.
Hey, Chuck, thanks for bringing that to our attention, man. Really good info. I appreciate that very much. And thanks for holding on during the break. All right, that's a good call. Hey, listen, let me jump into number two on the Triple Dipper, though. Ukraine, what now and what next? So the situation in Ukraine has truly been morphing into something that no one expected back when it all first started. Now, I will say this, too. Don't get me wrong. When I start telling you here in a moment about the actual offensive action on the part of the Russian military stalling out, it does not mean the Ukrainian people aren't suffering. Right now, the United Nations High Council for Refugees estimates that upwards of 10 million people in Ukraine have been displaced. In the military, we literally refer to those as displaced civilians. It means they may not be refugees, but they have at the very least been displaced from their homes. They may be homeless now or wandering to the next place or trying to get out. But displaced civilians are at great risk because they don't have the protections or securities of their own homes and places where they can hunker down. They are almost in refugee status, but they may still be in country. They're displaced civilians. 10 million. All right, but here's a report, by the way, that comes from the Institute for the Study of War. Their website is understandingwar.org. It gives a great daily intel report, and I mean like down to troop movements and the names of Russian units. And they do say that this is as of this weekend, that Ukrainian forces have defeated the initial Russian campaign of this war. That is a major assessment. And by the way, this is General Jack Keane's organization. This is not a fly-by-night. This is not, you know, a guy who has a blog site. This is an actual institute run by former military leaders and with, you know, extremely high rank and experience, not the least of which is four-star General Jack Keane. Ukrainian forces have defeated the initial Russian campaign of this war. That campaign aimed to conduct airborne and mechanized operations to seize Kyiv, Kharkiv, Odessa, and other major Ukrainian cities. If you recall, by the way, none of those have been seized. None. Now, in Mariupol, which was one of the first major objectives in the southeastern part of the country, that siege is still ongoing, although it's estimated that upwards of 80% of the structures and infrastructure of Mariupol have been devastated. And by the way, when you're looking at it, you're not looking at major military installations or places where the military had set up positions. You're looking at things like shopping malls, hospitals, churches, theaters. The theater in Mariupol, which was a grand facility, had upwards of 1,000 people hunkered down in the basement as a bomb shelter, and they had taken the time to mark the parking lot in large white letters that said children so that enemy aircraft would know not to bomb it. What do? They leveled it. All right. This, according to this estimate from the Institute for Study of War, Mariupol is likely to eventually fall. But even doing so, it's not going to free up enough Russian combat power to be able to move to other parts of the nation and make a difference. It said had the Russians taken Mariupol quickly or with relatively few losses, they would have likely been able to move enough combat power west. Well, they haven't. Next thing here, Russian forces in the south appear to be focusing on a drive towards a city called Kryvyi Rih, presumably to isolate and then take Zaporizhia and Dnipro from the west, but they're unlikely to secure any of those cities in the coming weeks. This is a major, this is an incredible fail on the part of Russia. This is basically an epic fail on the part of Russian leadership. And reports are coming out now, by the way, in case you haven't seen it, that a fourth Russian general has been killed. Now, when's the last time you heard about American generals being killed in battle? Well, estimates are that the reason why Russian generals keep being killed are, number one, they are targets of opportunity for snipers. And I saw earlier that a report by General David Petraeus says he believes that snipers have been given the mission of seeking out and finding these generals. But the fact that they are within sniper range at all indicates these generals have no choice but to go to the front to communicate and to move their troops. Whereas in, you know, highly trained Western forces like the United States, the generals don't have to be on the front line to see it and to make it happen. Because our command and control nodes are so efficient, and our leaders down to the lowest level, our team leaders, an E4 team leader in a squad is allowed to make localized decisions for his team. A fire team leader can make more decisions sometimes than a platoon leader or a company commander in the Russian army. I say that somewhat loosely, but there you go. Because we delegate authority down, whereas they withhold authority up at the higher levels in the Russian army. It's a throwback to the days of the Soviet Union when they didn't trust people to make decisions, and they still don't. Okay, now, moving forward on this, one of the things that's happening in the South is the Black Sea. Now, the Black Sea fleet is set sail. And the single largest pool, according to the Institute for Study of War, of ready reserves that the Russian military even has are their, what are they called? Their naval infantry, which is their version of the Marines. And their naval infantry is aboard amphibious landing ships, looking like they're moving towards Odessa, which is a major, major, major port city on the Black Sea that is still in control of the Ukrainians. But it's saying here in this particular INTSUM or intel summary, much of that naval infantry is on board those ships, presumably with intent to land near Odessa. But right now, the ground lines of communications have not been firmly established from Crimea to Odessa. That means basically an amphibious landing could isolate itself and be in big trouble. And so they haven't done it, and we don't know if they will or when. So here's the deal. The culmination of the initial Russian campaign is creating conditions of what they call a stalemate. Two military words for you there, culmination and stalemate. Those are actual military terms. Culmination means they have reached the end state. Well, I mean, that's what culmination means. But to say that we're at the culmination of the campaign means that we have just entered a new phase of the war. If this sum is correct, and I have no reason to believe it's not, if we are at culmination, then we are now entering what they believe is stalemate. Stalemate, of course, you can determine that just from the basic definition of the word, but stalemate in military terms means basically a violent and bloody and somewhat protracted force-on-force where no one really moves. They conduct offensive operations in both directions, but it doesn't fundamentally change things. So that's where we are right now. Here's the key takeaways, and this is amazing. Key takeaways from the Institute for the Study of War. We now assess that the initial Russian campaign to seize Ukraine's capital of major cities and force regime change has failed. They are now saying openly that the Russian campaign, the Russian efforts, are a failure. They're a failure politically, they're a failure socially, they're a failure geopolitically, and they are certainly a failure militarily. They predict that the war is going to descend into this bloody phase of stalemate that could last for weeks or even months. They predict that Russia is going to expand its efforts to bombard Ukrainian civilians in order to try and break their will, but that they will likely fail at breaking the will of the Ukrainian people. And they also project that the Russians appear to have abandoned their plans to attack Odessa in the near term. Folks, that is all amazing. That's literally the big bruiser got in the ring thinking he'd beat up on the little guy, and the little guy went spider monkey on him and broke his nose. That's what you're looking at right here. You're looking at the underdog just literally just jack-slapped the big guy. Russia came in there thinking that they were the thing, throwing their forces in, believing that the world would sit back and say nothing. The world took note, and the Ukrainians fought back. And it has turned into a complete failure at an epic level on the part of the Russian military and really the Russian leadership. Now, do I have time? Yes, I do. Okay, I got a couple minutes here. This is a neat local tie-in. Discovery Life Sciences, story off of AL.com from yesterday. Discovery Life Sciences, right here in Huntsville, literally has a lab in Ukraine. And Glenn Belosky, who's the CEO out there, is quoted as saying that their lab in Ukraine, that they've had to relocate their employees and rushing to get help to them and do all they can to support them, and that 20 of their 64 employees have been relocated, and the rest of them either had to stay or join the military. And he literally said there were times we'd be on a Zoom call, he said, and his top official at the Ukraine site would have to say, "I have to go," as Russian rockets were exploding in nearby buildings. Anyway, so yeah, one of our locals has a branch in Ukraine, and they've been dealing with the losses of their folks. He does say right now, to their knowledge, none of their employees in Ukraine has been killed or injured, but they have certainly been displaced. Some of them are now in Germany. Some of them did not want to leave their homes. Others went straight into the military to fight the Russian invaders. All right, Copper, take us to a break. When we get back from this break, folks, I got a little more on this. It's important to keep track of the story. I mean, I've said it on here, and I'm not trying to be in any way, you know, grandiose when I say this. But to me, this is the story of the decade. Right now, the great Russian bear aggressively sought to invade a neighboring country with no provocation. I don't care what they say about NATO moving too close to their borders. NATO's been there for 40 years or more. And now they want to invade? Now, what they saw was weakness on the world stage, and Putin needed to do something to save face. So he invaded the sovereign nation next door, and it went badly. And now we're all seeing, by the way, that the Russian military is not near what we thought it was. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We will be right back. Talk 770 AM 92.5 FM WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative and just plain right. We're just kind of wrapping up a section here on the Triple Dipper that I've been calling almost daily now. Ukraine, what now? What next? You know, some I just gave you the intelligence summary a moment ago on actual troop movements and the fact that those at the Institute for the Study of War, which is one of the sources that I respect the most in terms of getting analytical views of all of this, believe that we can now say that the Russian campaign has culminated, that we have reached the point of what militarily is viewed as stalemate, which is where you have basically locked down forces, almost like trench warfare, if you will. Not really, but sort of like that from World War I, where they sat there on the front. You actually have a front, and the lines of demarcation are there, and both sides may commence offensive and defensive operations, but the truth is no one's really getting anything done. They're not moving the needle. But it's bloody, and it could be protracted. That being said, other things are happening right now. There's a great story on military.com. Military.com dated today. Ukraine rejects a Russian demand for surrender in Mariupol. Love that. Mariupol is being devastated. Mariupol will not be a city much longer. Mariupol in the southeast along the Black Sea is very close to Crimea and Russia. It's one of those that was expected to be taken very quickly, because it's in close proximity to territories that Russia has already controlled, not to mention the Russian border itself. And yet they can't take it. They can't take it, but they're flattening it instead. But Ukrainian officials, according to military.com, defiantly rejected a Russian demand that their forces in Mariupol lay down arms and raise white flags. Even as Russia intensified its attempt to bombard Mariupol into surrender, it says, its offensive in other parts of Ukraine has floundered. It goes on to say, the Ukrainian Deputy Prime Minister, Irina Vereshchuk, told the news outlet Ukrainian Pravda, there can be no talk of any surrender or laying down of arms. We have already informed the Russian side about this. Well, Mariupol Mayor Peter Andrushenko went a step further. He basically got on national news cussed out the Russians and told them he didn't even need to wait till the morning deadline the Russians had given. They couldn't have his city. God love him in Mariupol. Now, that to say, a lot of things are happening still, though, that are extremely concerning. And the rhetoric coming out of this is not mild. Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky, who's really been galvanizing the world with his ability to motivate his people and to provide, you know, encouragement. And anyway, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky over the weekend, in a story here on Fox dated yesterday, warned of a possible third world war if peace talks with Russia fail. That's, now, granted, he's using inflammatory rhetoric trying to guide Western society to come into his territory like boots on the ground or you know, birds in the air. And we're not going to do that right now. But he went on even further and said, aside from the idea that he sees a World War III coming if this continues on, he also said he's renewed his request to be allowed to have Ukraine enter into as a member of NATO. Well, that's probably not going to happen right now either. But his response to all that's going on, he said that if he had been allowed to be a NATO member, then we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. And he's not wrong. Here's my wrap-up of this. I watched the U.S. response, and while I don't want to see U.S. troops on the ground, I don't. I do believe that there's things we should be doing differently, like allowing those MiG-29s to be transferred, like making sure they have serious air defense capability, like making sure that arms and aid shipments are getting there quicker than what we've done, because we dithered too long. The Biden administration has been dithering on this too long. Well, Newt Gingrich wrote a piece. You can find it on his website, Gingrich360.com, just this past weekend. And one of the things that I've been trying to put words into what I was seeing. One of the things that I have been seeing over and over again in watching the way President Biden addressed all this issue, Newt Gingrich encapsulated it quite well. It's as if he is emotionally withdrawn. And that's what I'm seeing, man. When you watch him speak about this, he has no passion in his voice whatsoever. It doesn't look like he's at all offended or deeply concerned. It appears that he's almost, you know, a little bit sleepy about it, like he's talking about last night's spaghetti dinner. That's the way you feel when you're watching the president of the free world talk about Russia invading a sovereign nation in Eastern Europe. That he appears to be almost emotionally withdrawn. Well, that's your update for the day. Ukraine, what now? What next? Well, what next is stalemate, it appears. What next is probably more bombing of civilians. What next is massive displaced civilian operations and refugee operations in neighboring countries. All right. Coming up next, after the top of the hour, I've got my friend State Senator Arthur Orr calling into the show. We're going to talk about what's happening here in Alabama for a while. State House machinations. There are things happening and not happening. And we'll get his views on some of that and see what he has to say about bills that are still floating through the legislature here in the last 7 or 8 days. They've got less in this legislative session. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. Coming up next, State Senator Arthur Orr. Stay tuned.